Childcare in Australia went through a big experiment this year in response to the pandemic. Suddenly, it was free. That's over now, and in Melbourne, there's huge concern about whether many operators are going to survive the second lockdown. But our experiences during this pandemic have raised the question, what would permanent free childcare do for young children and families and society generally? Former South Australian Premier Jay Weatherill is the CEO of Thrive by Five, an organisation that wants to improve early childhood development outcomes. Jay, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Now, what did we learn from that three-month period when childcare was completely government-funded?
What we saw is a range of people that never used childcare before had the opportunity to do it because it's just ferociously expensive for some young families. And really, if you think about our childcare system, it was never really designed for the early learning that many people now think is so important. So it was really designed as a system of childminding when people were at work. And it was never designed to take into account what we now know about the way in which a child's brain develops in those first 5 years and how crucial those high-quality early learning experiences are. So the system doesn't take advantage of all of the wonderful opportunities to help children grow and develop in those early years.
So you talked about hearing that people who hadn't been able to access it had during that free time. Do we have hard data on that, or is it more a sense from talking to providers?
Yeah, just talking to providers at the moment, because one of the difficulties is the data is collected through the federal government and the state governments, and they're still going through that data collection phase. But we're very keen to get our hand on those sorts of data so that we can analyse this on a more careful basis.
And Jay, childcare centres in Melbourne are closed for at least the next 6 weeks, except for essential workers and vulnerable children, though it's still unclear who is an essential worker. How might that affect children and parents, for that matter?
Well, it's going to put a lot of pressure on families. We know that many families who still want to go to work because they're in the essential services sector, they've been told that childcare centres will remain open, but we yet to see how that will occur because some of these centres might be down to 5% of their earlier enrolments. So that will put a lot of pressure on those centres, whether they'll still be able to be open and whether parents will be able to place their children there and still be able to work will be a massive issue. Then, of course, there's the parents. They're at home with their children, and it's crucial that we get the sort of support and information to those parents to allow them to really replicate the sort of experiences they get in those high-quality early learning centres at home with them when they're with their children.
And we'll talk in some more detail soon about the concept of quality in early education, but I want to play a little bit of audio for you. The federal government set to announce some help for childcare centres today, and here's what Education Minister Dan Tehan said on RN Breakfast a bit earlier today.
So what I've said we will do is when it comes to the payment that we are making, that transition payment, that $708 million, we'll be looking at a top-up payment for those providers in Melbourne so that we know that they will be able to keep that guarantee.
Now, Jay Weatherill, what will that kind of support help that goes direct to providers, or would you prefer that childcare workers could access JobKeeper? What would help more to keep the sector viable?
Well, look, as a temporary measure, I think it's a good measure. But how many times do we have to bail this system out before we accept that it's in need of massive reform? I mean, this is the second time in a couple of months where 10 years ago we had, of course, the ABC learning collapse. So this is a precarious sector in what I think everybody acknowledges is an essential service. So we don't have schools falling over, we don't have hospitals falling over, yet our system of early learning has fallen over twice in a few months. And so this is the thing that needs our attention now. It's an outdated system that was set up for a different purpose. It was set up for as I said, the child mining purpose. But it doesn't even do that properly. There are many people that miss out on actually even being able to use it for that purpose because it was constructed in an era when All that was really sought to be provided was a little bit of support for mums, typically, who were going to work part-time. That was the conception was that basically women weren't going to be a permanent feature of the workforce. So it's an old-fashioned system. It doesn't address early learning and it doesn't even address workforce participation. It's in need of massive reform.
It does need to do both those roles, though, doesn't it? I mean, it allows women to access the workforce in some way. So is there a way that we could invest in it so that it did both those things without compromising the early education outcomes?
Absolutely. And in fact, the two things are related. Families are going to be reluctant to have their children in early learning centres that don't meet quality standards. And we know that currently 20% of them don't actually meet the Commonwealth Government's own quality standards. So the quality of care is also going to be influential on the decisions that parents take about placing their children in these sorts of centres. But the simple answer is a universal early learning offering for every child in this country. And what that will do is two things will happen. One is that you'll have extraordinary benefits for children because we know that in those first 5 years, babies' brains, when they're actively engaged, are forming a million neural connections every second. Now, once you know that, once you just focus on that for a moment, you realise that the quality of those experiences, whether it's at home with their parents or in these centres, are just so crucial to their later health, learning and behavioural trajectories. And so we get all of these massive benefits by providing that high-quality early learning experience. And, of course, we free up all of these parents, typically women, to work to their highest and best use, which is wonderful for our economy, to make sure that we utilise all of the talent of the whole of our workforce, not just half of it.
Your organisation, Thrive by Five, Jay Weatherall, has put out some reports in recent years, one of which looking at the cost of late intervention. Could you tell us a little bit about that economic balance? Because a lot of people are going to say, look, if we fund universal childcare, that cost is going to be huge.
Yeah, the first thing to say about cost is the cost's already being borne. It's just being borne by young families at the moment. We have one of the most expensive childcare systems in the world. But if you look at the costs avoided if you invest in quality early learning, we've estimated that those costs, with a detailed study that's used a series of consortium partners, including the Early Intervention Foundation from the United Kingdom, Front Project and Woodside, a whole range of partners came together to produce this report, which said that $15 billion of funding would be saved by investing appropriately in the early years. So that's the cost of late intervention. We cost ourselves $15 billion per annum, and they're essentially costs that fall into our child protection system. All these remedial services to fix up difficulties that are created from the lack of investment in the early years.
Can we really slate all that back to a lack of good early childhood education? The things like child protection and youth justice, is that all down to just not going to kinder?
No, not all of it, but a substantial proportion of it would be able to be gained. And that's without even counting the work that the Grattan Institute report has estimated of $27 billion per annum, which would accrue to the national economy if we were able to attract back into the workforce the sorts of people that are excluded by our current childcare arrangements. So basically childcare at the moment, if you're the second income earner, which is typically a woman, for that fourth and fifth day, basically you're punished for going to work. In other words, you pay almost all of the income that you earn on day four and five, sometimes even more, in childcare fees or other expenses in just getting your child to childcare. So those costs, $27 billion per annum, accrue to the national economy because we don't have an early learning system that encourages the second income earner, usually woman, to work.
Jay, last week we saw a new Closing the Gap agreement put in place. Tell us a little bit about how Thrive by Five approaches the challenge of improving Indigenous early learning.
Yeah, we have a separate initiative within our organisation, the Mindaroo Foundation, called Generation One, which is very much focused on providing employment opportunities and business opportunities for Aboriginal people in this country. But my initiative, which is about all children, obviously has a critically important role for Aboriginal children. We know that investing in those first 5 years is absolutely crucial to the trajectory for the life of every child. And, of course, this is critically important for Aboriginal kids who we know that come to school. When we measure on the Australian Early Development Census, often about 40% on average of those children are coming to school with some form of developmental vulnerability. So that means they're coming to school behind the eight ball. And once we get them at school, of course, they progress well, but the gap they come in with proves very difficult to close. So investing in the early years will give them every possible chance of being the very best they can be. So we think this is the big social reform, which is the big equity reform in relation to Aboriginal disadvantage. And it was pleasing to see that that was acknowledged in some of the material that was recently published by Minister Ken White.
And Thrive by Five has been working in partnership with the WA government and Telethon Kids Institute on a kind of prototype early learning centre. Tell us about that, Jay. What would it look like, this kind of way of the future, and how is it different to the centres that we might be familiar with?
Yeah, I mean, look, there are pockets of excellence already around the country, and we've been investing for some time in a little school called Chalice in Armidale in Western Australia. And it's really a hub. It's a place typically attached to a school which has all of the services you'd expect from birth through to five. So it's about getting visibility on these little babies all the way through to when they come through to school. It's about supporting parenting, the wraparound services in the health sector, community support. It's as much focused on the parent as the child to make sure that they have all the support and opportunities they need. But critically, what it does is really connect all of these services together in a trusting place where people can come to have to really see play-based learning modelled for their children. We can all benefit from seeing how other parents parent and by having tips about how to engage your child, and as well as all the traditional services like child, infant and maternal health. So that's the model that we're trialling around Western Australia, and ultimately it's the sort of model we'd love to see rolled out across the whole country. And the building blocks for that are universal free early learning. And we think there's a massive opportunity for the Commonwealth to step up and play their role in this.
Well, and you've talked about the argument for the economic benefits in the long term, but is this really the right time for a great big new spending commitment? We're facing our biggest deficit since World War II.
Well, this is exactly the time to think about nation building. And nation building begins with children. I mean, this was always a good idea to invest in the early years. We know from the data that the rates of return investment in the early years is the best possible investment you could ever make. It is the classic blue chip investment. What was always put against us is, oh, in a few years' time, we've got to balance the budget. We've got this surplus that we're always chasing. And so we're always told to set aside, if you like, these big investments that were obviously going to have big returns because they were going to somehow prevent us from reaching the surplus, which was always just around the corner. Well, surpluses are gone. And I think now what we're talking about, I think in a way we've been relieved of our short-term focus and can now think about the really big issues about rebuilding our society and our economy.
Relieved is a really interesting way to put it, Jay. Thanks so much for joining us. It's a bigger discussion than I think we've got room for here on Life Matters, but I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.
Jay Weatherill, former South Australian Premier, now CEO of the Thrive by Five initiative, who are calling for universal free childcare.